Hello, everybody. Thanks for popping in to listen to episode 10 of the Drop Set. We've hit a milestone. We've hit double digits, which is awesome. So, yay, there was much rejoicing. I am your host and entertainment for the afternoon, Darren Starr, coach, trainer, owner, operator, everything at Five Star Physique. So thanks for joining in. We've got a good show lined up today. I have what I think to be a good show lined up. We've got two main topics. One of them is near and dear to the heart of every bodybuilder, and that is talking about meal prep, tips and tricks, etc. And then a while back, we did a discussion, I called it Macros 101, and today will be the sequel to that, Macros 102. We got to take it slow. We're not ready for 201 just yet. Realistically, there's only so much to know about macros. It's not, I don't think we're going to have a super in-depth discussion about it, but you might learn a couple new things and get a little bit more comfortable with the world of macro tracking and flexible dieting. So if we can get into that space where you feel comfortable doing that kind of stuff as part of your routine and not relying on a set meal plan necessarily, or at least one of your own creation, then great, mission accomplished. So let's start off. What is new for this week? So this last weekend, my wife had an art show, which is cool. So she is an art teacher, and her school hosts a professional art show each year, and she gets an opportunity to have a booth in there. And so she actually did well and sold some work. So it's always exciting. Band stuff continues. We have another show we're doing tomorrow. And then after that, we have basically a day to recover, and then the wife and I are taking the dogs and heading on spring break, so we'll be gone for a little bit, which is exciting. And then, of course, I've got a cut that begins following that, which is less exciting, but I am more than ready for it. It's been a long growth phase. I've been doing this for about 4.5 months now, so I'm ready to cut down and stop feeling like such a tubbo. So I want to give a couple of shout-outs this week also to people that I know are listening, people that I know are watching, so thank you. The first is, strangely enough, to our band's drummer, Aaron, who invariably, when we meet for practice each week, he'll come in and ask me a question about the previous week's podcast. So, Aaron, thank you. It's much appreciated. And also, Tom Knopfsinger on Facebook. Thank you, Tom. Your encouragement is always appreciated. I like the fact that you're getting something out of this. I enjoy doing it. You know, the great thing about this podcast is I'm not relying or hoping to get sponsors or anything like that. I do it just because, you know, it helps me get the word out on my philosophy and just bodybuilding in general, and it gives me a little bit of practice doing, you know, a little bit of media work, etc., which I think is fun, and I enjoy doing it. So I don't necessarily hope to get anything out of it, except I'd like to get, you know, a little engagement from people, questions, etc. So I do want to say, as you're listening to this, if a question pops up, go ahead and comment. I'm looking at any potential comments that could be coming across right now. So if you've got a question, pipe up and let me know, and I can answer it live as we record this thing. And for those of you listening to this on a podcast and not on Facebook, understand that I do not necessarily have Tourette's, but I may interject with stuff that I see on the Facebook live feed as it comes across. So let's see. I have a little Q&A this week. One thing, it came up with a client who was, you know, we were looking at macros, et cetera, and she mentioned that she had kind of an epiphany, and it came down to cooking with oil, specifically coconut oil, but it could apply to anything. So the question came up, you know, what do I recommend doing with something like that? You know, how, if we want to cook with oil, how do we track that stuff? And the answer is a simple one, and the answer is don't, because it is a giant pain in the ass to try and account for those macros. You can make guesses, but, you know, especially when you're in a pre-contest phase and precision matters, fats are usually going to be a little on the low side, especially if we're trying to keep some carbs in place. So you know, if your fats are down to, say, 35 or 40 grams, if you're off by 3 or 4 grams, that's not completely insignificant. It's not necessarily going to be a make or break kind of situation, but, you know, we want to tighten that up a little bit for sure. Because let's say, you know, we're cooking with oil, so, you know, you put some oil in a pan and then you throw veggies or whatever in there and you're heating it up, great. Okay, so first of all, did you measure how much oil that was, or did you eyeball it? So if you eyeballed it, we're already off to a bad start. Now, if you measure it, okay, great. But then, you know, how much of that is going to cook off? How much is actually going to make it onto what you're cooking? How much gets left behind in the pan? Then you transfer that into a bowl, you eat it, how much gets left behind in the bowl? You can see it's there's a lot of margin of error that gets introduced along the way. So for that reason, I typically recommend just don't. You know, use spray oil because, I mean, it's not as easy to cook with, but it's okay. And, you know, when it comes to veggies, just steam them in water. Add some salt to them. Oil, it overcomplicates things. It introduces potential error. So I typically advise against it. So, and that is the extent of the Q&A for this week. So that particular topic will actually make a comeback later on as we talk about tracking or actually meal prep. So so let's jump into it. So meal prep tips and tricks. People ask me about this a lot just because, you know, I mean, there's the, you know, the whole concept of meal prep Sunday, etc. I used to buy into that. I used to do that. And now I'm like, you know what? The last thing I want to do is dedicate a couple hours on a Sunday when I'm not working to working in the kitchen instead. Part of it is because, you know, whenever I'm in the kitchen, it still feels like work because it's related to what I do for work. So it has made me extremely lazy. And laziness plus determination equals efficiency, which I think is a fair formula. So I become very efficient at meal prep. There's a fine line that you need to ride here, and that is you can be really efficient, but typically when you are, the quality of what you do will suffer a little bit. So it could be a little like, I got to eat this. Okay, maybe I should have put a little bit more time into this. And then you put a little bit more time into something and it's great. And you're like, man, I'd love to have that hour and a half back. So what I present here is not necessarily an absolute, you should always do it this way. But I would say, try it this way. Try it with an eye towards efficiency. And I think with a little care, you can come out with something that ends up being edible, if not enjoyable. And you don't spend a whole lot of time getting it ready as well. So let's talk about it. So this is basically all of these things apply to mass prep. So, you know, if you're looking to like cook a steak, et cetera, for dinner, you're not meal prepping, you're cooking a steak. So meal prep means you're trying to prepare a whole bunch of stuff that's going to last several days so that you don't have to go back in and, you know, apply heat, boil water, et cetera, to get stuff ready. You're doing mass prep. So why mass prep is good? It's efficient. It makes it so that, you know, you put in a little bit of time, and then when you come back on each subsequent day, there's less time involved. So it's easier, it's more efficient in that way. Why is it bad? Well, you know, I mean, it's kind of like when you go to a fast food place and you get a burger that's a frozen patty versus someplace like a restaurant that will cook you up something fresh. The difference is quality. When you mass prep stuff, the quality is going to suffer a little bit, especially when you get to like day four of that chicken and it's starting to look a little questionable and you're like, oh dear God, what have I gotten into here? Which is why, you know, figuring out how much to prep is important. So, mass prep, you know, the knock on it is that, you know, everything comes out rubbery and gross, and that's not necessarily the case. There are ways around those things. So, first thing, just, you know, regarding this actually touches on both topics that we'll hit today, which is meal prep and a little bit of macro work. I want to talk about measurements, first of all, because this is some useful stuff. In bodybuilding, everything comes down to precision for the most part. It's precision and consistency. So making sure that you understand the things that can influence your precision and hamper it is important. So first thing is understanding units. And I always tell people to be consistent on units. So, you know, you can measure things in pounds, which is not terribly accurate, ounces or grams. And I would always tend to encourage grams. You know, it can be a little foreign for us Americans. I'm assuming most of us are Americans here, just because it's not a unit of measurement we're accustomed to. But once you start using it a little bit, you get really accustomed to it. If you are used to like using ounces to measure out your protein, and you say, okay, well, you know, we've got a 4-ounce serving here. I know what that looks like. Great. Well, how many grams is that? Well, it's 112 grams, I think. I should probably bust out my calculator here and double check my math on that, but I'm pretty sure I'm right. 112. Look at that. I got it. So it's 28 grams per ounce, and understanding that conversion rate can help tremendously. But I mean, whatever unit you use, I just find it's helpful to be consistent with it. note if something, and this really impacts your macros as well, if you're trying to track something that's cooked cooked versus raw. Usually, I would encourage people, and this is where it comes back to meal prep, however you are likely to serve something up and weigh it out is what you should use. So, for example, I would mass prep chicken breast, ground turkey, rice, things like that. So those are all things that I'm going to measure out cooked, and I'm going to use cooked values when I track my macros. Something like oats, unless you use steel cut, I know some people do mass prep that, but if you're looking for like rolled oats, you're not going to mass prep, you know, 5 cups of rolled oats probably, just because it's so easy to do it each time. So I'd measure that out dry. And that's really kind of the exception. Like, breakfast carbs, I tend to measure dry. Pretty much everything else I measure cooked. And that does impact the database entries that you use when you log your foods in something like MyFitnessPal. So, volume versus mass. So, this is one thing that always confuses me a little bit. So, some people will say, like, when I'm talking with somebody new, who's, you know, they're looking for a coach, and be like, great, let's talk, let's do a little evaluation here. Send me a little summary on what you're eating right now. You know, send me some pictures so we can do a whole evaluation, et cetera. So they'll send me their food log, and I'll get something that says like 1 cup chicken. I'm like, why in the hell are you measuring chicken volumetrically? That is weird as hell. That is strange. There are very few things that should be measured volumetrically, and the concept for that comes down to void space. So think of it this way. How many couches can you fit in the bed of your truck? 1, 2, maybe 3 if you get really clever, if you've got a huge truck and they're more like a love seat than a couch. But the difference is because when you fit them in there, you're going to have blank space that you just can't fill with an extra couch, right? So they don't compact very well together. So it's the same. That's what void space is. So when you're trying to measure out, let's say, cubed chicken or cooked rice or chopped up potato or anything like that, volumetrically, you've got all this void space, and then you're introducing additional air. Well, like, you know, how tightly do I pack this in here? You know, because you can take some cooked rice that's maybe holding a little bit of extra water, and you can pack it in there and get a shit ton of rice into 1 cup, versus if you just kind of scoop it out nice and loose. And I mean, the actual mass is going to be quite different. So I say volumetric things for volumetric measurements for two specific things, and that would be liquids. And even then, sometimes I will weigh liquids. It kind of depends on what I'm doing. And also, like dry oats, dry cream of rice, just because there's very little void space in that. You know, you're not going to pack dry oats super tight, because there's no water to squish out. There's no, you know, there's no compression that really happens there. So those things are easy to measure volumetrically. But even things like, things that are commonly, spelled out volumetrically, like oil, like a tablespoon of oil, a tablespoon of peanut butter, etc. I never do those volumetrically, and we'll get to that a little bit later as far as how I do that. So keep in mind also things like, some things will change volume when they get cooked. And the biggest example of this would be spinach. You know, raw spinach, you take a handful of raw spinach, you're holding like 10 calories worth of spinach. Now you cook it down and you grab a handful of cooked spinach, now it's closer to like 100 calories because the volume compresses. So one leaf that's say this big becomes this big. And so, you know, the caloric value of that leaf doesn't change, but now you've got a whole bunch more of it in the same amount of space. So just be mindful of things that undergo a significant volume change, cooked rice would be another one. So just all things to consider. What else do we have here? I set this up on my outline to talk about it now. So I talked about measuring oils and peanut butter volumetrically, and I never do that. The reason being because those things, peanut butter also, oils obviously, are oily. And when you use your tablespoon and you measure that out, suddenly you've got a dish to wash. Did I mention I'm lazy? I am. So if I now have something that I have to apply soap to and get some hot water going and wash it off, I've just killed my efficiency rating for the day. So that is non-negotiable. So instead, I use the scale. And if you look at the label on a jar of peanut butter, it'll say serving size, 2 tablespoons, 33 grams, or whatever it is. It's about 32, 33 grams. Great. So let's weigh out 32 grams instead. And the easiest way to do that is to take the lid off the jar, put the jar on the scale, zero it out, and then take your spoon and scoop it out until it reads negative 32 grams. Or conversely, if you're trying to measure out oil, and I know I said don't cook with oil, but you know, you can add it as a dressing or something like that. Weigh it out. So a tablespoon is going to be, you know, 15 grams or something like that, 16 grams. So again, put whatever you're adding it to on the scale and just pour out 16 grams. Coconut oil is something, you know, it's an oil, but it's solid at room temperature. So if I'm using that, I'll put the jar of coconut oil on the scale and scoop it out until I get the negative measurement for whatever I want. So it's easier that way. I can just use whatever spoon I'm going to use to eat it with, or if it's peanut butter, I'll just eat it straight off the spoon because, again, lazy. It's not like I'm going to bust out a celery stalk or anything like that. Just, you know, go negative on the scale. It makes it a lot easier, less to wash, more accurate that way, just way more efficient. Did I mention I am lazy? I will probably say that 100 times today. Apologize in advance. So let's talk specifically meal prep. Let's go proteins. Just because when people think of meal prep Sunday, they're typically talking about getting their protein sources ready. And if they do some carbs or anything regarding some fats, it's largely an afterthought. So for me, proteins comes down to chicken. I can't stand fish. I refuse to eat it. I am going to just throw a 7-year-old temper tantrum if somebody wants me to eat fish. Gross. No thanks. Ground turkey. I like it, but you know, when I incorporate that, it's always when I'm on a cutting phase, and so fats are a little bit more scarce, so I've got to go with like the 99.1 ground turkey, and no. I had one client once who told me, because he was accustomed to having like the full fat ground beef, etc., and so he tried this 99.1 turkey, and he told me it tasted like it was from outer space. Alex, I just want you to know that I remember that. I know that was probably about 2 years ago, but it stuck with me. Yeah, I mean, for me, it's chicken. And there's a lot of ways that you can do chicken. I used to actually boil it in water. That was a long time ago. And I'm like, this is great. This is how you do it. I could do so much at a time. And never mind. It was disgusting when I did that. A lot of people will grill it. More power to you. I do not have the patience to do that. You know, whether it's a grill pan on the stove or actually firing up the grill outside. You know, I've got some hardcore clients who, bless their hearts, you know, they're living in the Midwest and it's 28 degrees outside and they are out there with the grill fired up and they're doing their meal prep outside. Kudos to you guys. My hat is off. Major respect. I am too lazy for that. Did I mention? Yes, I know I did. So for me, chicken, when we're talking meal prep, for me, that means proteins, which for me means chicken, which for me means slow cooker. That is the only thing that I have used for protein meal prep in like the last 3 years is the slow cooker. Once I started using it, I'm just like, there's no going back because it is so easy. So basically, what it is, I mean, it's kind of like playing a little bit of a game because it takes a long time to get some chicken through the slow cooker, typically about 6 to 8 hours, depending on the model that you have. It's kind of hard to mess it up, which is great, especially for somebody like me who is not only lazy, but also really bad in the kitchen. So the game is making sure that you get it ready in time for when you need it, but not so far in advance because, as we know, this mass-prepped chicken is kind of a time bomb. It's got an expiration date. Last thing you want to do is get it ready 2 days ahead of time because then by the time you're ready for it, it's only good for like another 2 days. So if you've prepared too much, it's going to be a lot of waste. So there's a little bit of management there. Just knowing how much you go through on a daily basis will help tremendously. What I do, the game that I play is I go to the grocery store, I get the thing that's like, you know, about 4 pounds of chicken, I stick that in the freezer. I've usually got a few of those in the freezer. Much to my wife's chagrin, I take up all the space in there. Sorry, honey. And then it just becomes a question of looking at the inventory that I already have in the fridge that's pre-cooked and ready to go, figuring out about when that's going to get done, pulling something out of the freezer so it has time to defrost. I don't need it totally defrosted, but I also don't want to have to bust out a hammer and chisel to separate the things to get them into the crock pot. And then throwing them in there and then just making sure it's set for 8 hours. If you don't already have a crock pot and you're going to shop for one, make sure you get one with the timer function so you don't have to be around to turn it off. But you set it on the timer and... Oh, Facebook is telling me this is my most liked live video yet, and also that's my most commented on live video yet. Well, thanks, Facebook. I appreciate that. Where was I? Oh, yeah. So, you want to get one that will turn itself off after however long, you know, whether it's 6.5 hours, 7 hours, however long it takes. You know, but before I got a new one for Christmas recently. Thanks, sweetheart. Before that, I was using one that did not have a timer function on it. So I had to be around to turn it off when the timer was up. So it was an extra degree of difficulty. This one now has a timer, so it shuts off after however long I set it for, which is fantastic. So, and then it gets a little bit of time to cool off. And then at this point, I will typically drain the liquid out of it and then throw it into a container, throw it in the fridge, and I'm done. So the total time taken is, you know, about 8 hours or so. The total time that I actually spend in the kitchen interacting with it is, discounting the time it takes to actually clean the thing out after I'm done, is about 3 minutes. And that's getting it started, washing hands after you've touched the raw chicken, coming back, getting it into a container, washing hands again, etc., is about 3 or 4 minutes. So, and that's good for, you know, typically about 3 or 4 days. So that's a good ratio as far as I'm concerned. Now, my typical meals will be protein shakes. Sometimes I'll have a protein bar, you know, depending on the phase that I'm in, I might have a protein bar once daily. And then chicken makes up the rest of it. So that's 2 to 3 meals a day. So that's the only thing that I'm really prepping. And I spend less than 5 minutes, you know, let's call it 7 minutes for the whole week if I end up doing it twice. That's a win for me. So the question then becomes, okay, we've made this stuff. Now, what do we do with it? And Darren, you just said throw it in there. You didn't say what else to do with it. Yeah, don't do anything with it. I'd make it plain. I don't eat it plain, but when I prepare it, it's plain. What I found is that if I spend a lot of time seasoning something, and again, this comes back to me being an idiot in the kitchen and having zero skill, and nobody will ever hire me to make anything for them ever. But it's like, I don't know how to season something appropriately. It's like, you know, is this too much? Is this not enough? Are these blends going to go together or what? I don't know. So rather than committing to, you know, a particular thing that I've thrown in here for a whole 4 pounds of chicken, like, you know, some blend of seasons or whatever, seasonings, I will just season each meal as I dish it up. So typically I'm going to add like some soy sauce, some garlic powder, some Trader Joe's everyday seasoning for a little bit of salty kick to it. I mean, you know, something like that. Maybe some Frank's hot sauce, maybe a little bit of salsa, etc. So if you don't commit to something when you actually do the mass prep, then every time you go to make a meal out of it, you can pick something different then. So you get a little bit more flexibility out of it that way. The other thing is the problem with mass producing chicken is it turns into rubbery dog shit within a few days, and it just becomes really hard to eat. And the way to combat that is to shred it. So what I will do when I'm measuring it out for a meal is get my hands in there, take a piece, and just pull it apart and shred it as I put it into the bowl, which is sitting on the scale, so I can get the correct amount measured in there. So whether it's bowl, Tupperware, whether you're doing, you know, 4 or 5 of these at a time, whatever, doesn't matter, but just shred it as you go through it. And then the real trick then is when you reheat it, put something on top of that to keep the moisture in, whatever moisture is left in there. Put some kind of a lid. So if you've got a Tupperware container, you know, unlock the lid and just put it a little bit askew on top so that, you know, so that steam can escape, but it's going to keep most of the water in there, which is going to help it retain more moisture. It's less dry. It's less disgusting. Because I work at home, I don't use a lot of Tupperware. I don't, pack up a bunch of stuff to leave the house. So I'll do it in a bowl and I'll just put a plate over on top of the bowl, throw it in the microwave. And then there'll be some water, some condensation on the underside of that plate. And I just kind of knock that off back into the bowl, stir it all together. So it keeps it a little bit more moist that way. Another thing that you could do with this is, you know, especially, you know, this will be more pronounced if there's still some frozen bits on the chicken when you throw it into the crock pot, but you're going to have a good deal of fluid, liquid in there. You know, we call it chicken juice, and we used to save that and actually put it over the dog's food because they love that. And then they got sick of it. So our dogs are spoiled. What can I say? You can leave that juice in there. Maybe we should call it broth. That sounds a little less disgusting, actually, that chicken broth. When you put the chicken breast into a container, you can put some of that broth in there, and that will help keep them from drying out while they're in the container, too. I stopped doing that just because I felt it was kind of gross. I was reaching in there and everything was still all slimy. I'm like, I'd rather have it a little bit drier than get my hands in this stuff. That's an OCD thing, but that's another thing to consider here. So other proteins that you could use, I mean, ground turkey, you could do tuna packets. If you've got the fat macros to play with, you can do like a turkey sausage or something like that and just cut up little chunks of that. These are things, you know, the ground turkey, obviously you're going to brown that in a pan. The other things, though, you know, tuna, sausage, et cetera, they don't really require any kind of prep. You know, they're packaged products. There's nothing wrong with packaged products. I used to do fish, and it's worth noting. I mean, it was nasty as hell, but I was trying to be good and try it. So, you know, trying to broaden the horizons, et cetera. So I gave it a shot, and the way that I would do it was actually to use these Ziploc steamer bags, which you may have seen those in the grocery store. But basically, you can just put the raw fish in there, and I would actually throw some veggies in there with it too. And then there's writing right on the steamer bag that says, hey, if it's fish and it's thawed, throw it in the microwave for however long, and then you just do that, great, you're done. Or if it's frozen and it's chicken or whatever, it's got a little table on there so you know it's going to take 4, 6, or 8 minutes, however long it is. That actually worked really well. It came out very edible. It was kind of messy because it would kind of like explode a little bit. But as far as effectively cooking it, it did a great job. And then again, you season it. So if you're going to go the fish route, that is an easy way to do it that doesn't really require any prep aside from throwing your raw fillets or your frozen fillets in a bag and then just stick those in the freezer, throw them in your meal prep bag, whatever. So it's still fairly efficient. I was doing that twice a day for a little while. I think if you do anything for twice a day, you're bound to get sick of it before too long. But it worked. It was effective. You know, I didn't like it, not because of that, but just because it was fish. So, and yes, if you're wondering, I have had properly cooked fish as well, and it was every bit as gross as this stuff was. So, other things like, you know, eggs, egg whites, pretty tough to mass prep those. I wouldn't necessarily say, hey, cook up 4 cups of egg whites and then just dish those that. No, I mean, if you're going to do that, you know, just do it day by day. That's not something you want to mass prep. Eggs, I mean, you could hard boil those if you wanted to mass prep, if you're going to go the whole egg route. But then again, you're you know, basically painting yourself into a corner. You're going to be eating those. You're not going to be scrambling them up or anything like that. So, all things worth considering. So, for me, protein means chicken, which means slow cooker. So hopefully that helps a little bit. It's certainly something that I would encourage everybody to try. Give it a shot and see what you think. At least try it with one batch, and just don't forget to shred it. If you do that in the slow cooker and you pull those chicken breasts out and then you put it just on a plate and you microwave it and you eat it with a fork and knife and you tell me it's gross, I'm going to say, yeah, no shit, it's gross. You got to shred that. It makes all the difference in the world. It really does. I promise you. Let's move on. Carbs. So for carbs, you know, it depends on where you are at in your, you know, we'll assume it's a flexible dieting structure. So are you sticking with cleaner carbs or are you going with more processed and packaged foods? So obviously, if you're going the packaged route, there's no prep involved. You just buy your box of whatever it is and open it up and eat it. For clean stuff, which, you know, I would recommend that being the bulk of your carbs. And when we talk about macros 102 shortly, we'll go into that a little bit more in depth. You know, it becomes, you know, are you going to get that raw and prep it yourself, or are you going to do it prepackaged? And when I say prepackaged, I mean, you know, you can get pre-cut, pre-cooked potato cubes, for example. And if you look at the ingredients on that, you'll be able to find some options that are pretty clean. Like, there's very minimal fat. It's mostly carbs. You look at the ingredients, there isn't a lot of stuff in there. So that's not a bad option. When it comes to rice, my favorite product in the entire universe is Uncle Ben's Ready Rice in the orange bags. It's pre-cooked. There's a lot of different flavors. I always just get jasmine or brown. But that saves me from having to use a rice cooker or get the boil and bag stuff, which I've done all that before. I just get sick of it. I mean, the ready rice, it's a little bit more expensive. And dear God, this is going to be the second week in a row that I have ranted about this. But dear Uncle Ben's, or whatever the name of the company is that produces this product, fix your shit when it comes to your nutrition facts label, please. It says that there's like, you know, about two servings of 120 grams each in there, and that is not correct. There's right about 200 grams in every one of those damn bags, not 240. Please fix that. Okay, rant over. I'm sorry, I had to say it. Do I think anything is going to change on that front? No, but it does make me feel about 5% better to go off on it. So, the pre-cooked options for products like that can be great. They're a huge convenience. You know, at that point, you know, the ready rice is like, you know, you get the bag, you tear it about halfway open, you stick it in the microwave for 90 seconds, and boom, you're done. You've got about two servings of rice, two average-sized servings of rice, which is great. If you went with, like I used to use the boil and bag stuff, and, you know, you can get that in a various varieties. I would get jasmine rice there. You take these bags, you just submerge them in boiling water. You've got to kind of keep your eye on it and make sure it doesn't sit too long. Otherwise, the bag's going to start to melt. I had that happen a couple times. Oops, that was gross. But that works fine. And then, you know, you just drain that and then you put it in a container and then you've got rice for several days. And, you know, rice isn't one of those things that starts to turn on you, like somebody who's been bit by a zombie like the chicken does. The rice, I mean, it's got a shelf life for sure, but, you know, from day one to day three, it's pretty much the same. It doesn't tend to get super gross. And that's one of those things also where if it's getting gross, it's because it's drying out a little bit. You can just sprinkle a little bit of water in there and it's fine. So, the other thing would be, and, you know, for carbs, you're looking at, like, you know, grains and starches, like, you know, rice. Quinoa falls into a similar category, although it's hard to do those like single serving at a time. You know, you're pretty much going to be looking at mass producing that stuff. Stuff like oats, etc., you want to do that just one shot at a time. There's no need to mass produce that. The other thing, though, would be potatoes. I love me a good potato. And I tell you what, I've had people tell me all kinds of things like, oh, you poke it with the fork and you stick it in the microwave for this long and it's great. Or, oh, you do this or that. And I'm telling you, there is no way on earth to satisfactorily make an edible potato using the microwave. I will stand by that. Maybe I'm just really picky, but I dare anybody. Leave it in the comments if you've got it, and let me know if you've got a way. I have not found one. The only way I've found to produce a quality potato, a quality cooked, baked potato, is to throw it in the oven and leave it in there for about an hour. So you got to plan ahead for that stuff. And again, it's not really something you're going to mass produce. Maybe I'm just a potato snob. I don't know. If I want to be lazy about it, I'm going to buy some pre-cooked, pre-cut potatoes. And that, plus they're already seasoned. They taste great. Awesome. There isn't a whole lot of crap in there, so it's clean enough for me. But otherwise, like if I want a full-on baked potato, I'm going to wrap that sucker in some aluminum foil. You know, if I really want to make it good, before I do that, I'm going to put some olive oil over it, which kind of goes against what I said about cooking with oil. But, you know, keep in mind, I've been coming out of a growth phase for 4 months, so I've been trying to get these extra calories in. So rub some oil on the skin, put a little salt on it, and then maybe you can wrap it in aluminum foil or not. I didn't find much of a difference either way with that, actually. In the oven for about 40 to 50 minutes, depending on how thick the thing is. And man, oh, it's so good when it comes out. And that's kind of, I got spoiled, so it's hard for me to have a potato any other way. So worth considering. I don't have a good recipe for making a potato work. I know, you know, I mean, you can take like a little sweet potato and throw it in there for like 3 minutes or something like that, but it's not the same for me. It's not consistent. I'm not a fan. I have done it where I will chop them into little cubes and throw those cubes on like a cookie sheet and throw that in the oven. And I think it's been a while, but I think that was about a 20 to 30 minute process, and that would produce enough for several servings. So you can kind of mass produce it that way. That worked okay. You know, you can salt those things, put a little, you know, like spray oil on them or something like that. That works fine. Yeah, nothing beats a cooked potato in the oven. That's for sure. So fats are easy. There's no way to really prep a fat, or it's not really necessary to do meal prep for fat sources. A couple things that are worth mentioning here. I mean, you know, we talked about cooking with oil at the top of this. And if you missed that, just to recap, I do not recommend cooking with oil just because of the level of inaccuracy that it introduces into macro tracking. So, you know, if you're looking at, you know, protein sources or veggies, you know, veggies I would just steam. Protein sources I would find an alternate path that doesn't require oil. You know, you've got nuts, you've got nut butters, you've got fattier protein sources. So again, that doesn't really require any prep. But if you want to have a steak, great, you're not going to mass produce that. But, you know, that's a way to get your fats in as well. One thing, you know, I've got this, you know, list of fat sources that I like to encourage clients to go for. And one of them is avocado. So, you know, it's been referred to as the mother fruit. It's a fantastic food, super healthy, great fat profile. And the one thing also that's very important to mention here with dietary fats is don't get all your dietary fats from one source. You know, don't just have peanut butter. Fats are one of those things where there's a lot of benefits from different fat sources, you know, depending on if it's omega 3, 6, 9 fat, what the ratio of those is to one another. There's a tremendous benefit in getting a variety of fat sources. So don't be a one trick pony and just rely on one thing for your fats. So, you know, using coconut oil, not cooking with that, but like mixing it in with something like with oatmeal or cream of rice is great. You know, nuts, peanut butter, egg yolks, other fatty protein sources, etc. All good stuff. Avocados, though, again, this comes down to me being lazy and also sucking in the kitchen. I am terrible when it comes to managing inventory of avocados. And I think it's because they tend to have like a 20-minute window where they're at peak ripeness. It's like, you know, they're green, green, hard as a rock, green, green, green. Oh, perfectly ripe. And then purple and rotten. And that's it. And you like, what happened there? And, you know, especially if it's something that you want to try and have daily, you know, with like one meal a day, et cetera, it can be a giant pain in the ass to try and keep yourself stocked with stuff. And depending on what the season is as well, it may just be impossible, and where you're located, it may just be a complete non-starter. So, what I recommend instead are the Holy Guacamole mini containers, which are 100 calories a piece. It's right about 2 ounces. It's half an avocado. It's perfect. You know, they come in 6 packs, and they're a little bit more expensive, but they're already seasoned. You know, they've got like a little garlic and onion minced in there. So it's nice and tasty. So it's a good option if you're trying to get, you know, the benefits of avocado without the headaches of managing, being an inventory manager in your kitchen. It can be a great way to go. So all right, so let's jump in here. I spent a little bit more time on that than I thought I was going to. Where are we at here? We're at like 37 minutes. So let's talk macros 102. You know, we did macros 101, which was in a previous episode. I want to say maybe it was episode 2, 3, 4, something in that range, one of the earlier ones. So if you're just getting started with macros, I would go back and listen to that and get the basics. And so now that we've got the basics, okay, what's next? What you need to do is develop a plan of attack that works for you. I just realized it says 10 comments so far. None of them are showing up on my phone. So I wonder... sorry for those people in podcast land that I'm talking about my Facebook feed here. I'm wondering if, for some reason comments aren't showing up. I don't know. Let's see here. Oh, here we go. Okay. All right, cool. So, Jeffrey Scott says, potato in the microwave in a sandwich bag with a few tablespoons of water, close it up, leave an opening so it doesn't explode. About 8 minutes, let sit for 3, works pretty good. I like that. Okay. I'm going to give that a shot. I'm a potato fan. So, you know, I don't want to put myself in a corner where I've only got to spend an hour in the oven. So, you know, Megan says potatoes in the slow cooker, perfection. Okay. Pork tenderloin plus slow cooker equals awesome, says Allison. All right. I like this. All right. Cool. All right. Oh, Megan, you're in Mexico. You're on vacation. What the hell are you watching this video for? Stop it. Go to the beach. Jesus. That's hilarious. Oh, okay. So let's talk macros. You know, figure out a plan of attack that works best for you. So by that, I mean, it's helpful to really compartmentalize. What I would encourage you to do is, you know, it's a flexible diet. It's a macro-based approach. Limit your flexibility to some extent, just because otherwise it can be a really big, scary thing to try and put together a cohesive plan. So by that, I mean, settle on a few things that are going to be the same every day. Like for me, my first, second, and final meals of the day are always the same thing. It's just, they're things that work for me. It's consistent. It's easy. It's convenient. And pretty much regardless of what phase I'm in, the macros for those meals will work. I may need to dial back or go up on the carbs in those meals a little bit. Nonetheless, those three meals are pretty much always the same, which means, you know, that's cutting out about half my protein. It's cutting out, because that includes my pre and post workout meals, that's cutting about 60% of my carbs and not many fats. I don't have really any fats in those meals, so I've got most of those set aside for the rest of the day. So now I typically have three other meals during the day, and so now I've just got, you know, smaller numbers and three meals to try and hit. So it's basically you're moving up on your target a little bit, and it's easier to hit it. So you know, for some people, it may be like, you know, it's perfectly fine. Like, you're planning on eating six meals a day. I'm going to have five of them the same every day, and I've got one where it's flexible. So then you don't really have a daily macro number you're trying to hit, but you're getting those five meals in, and then you've got a certain number of macros set aside for that one meal, and it's your challenge, your goal, your opportunity to find however many different ways you can to hit that. And so it's helpful then to set aside some carbs, set aside some fats. Obviously, the protein is going to be there for sure. We want nice steady intake there. But if you set aside some fats and some carbs, you've given yourself a little bit more leeway. Whereas if you set aside and, you know, you have five meals all set up, and your sixth one is like, that's going to be my flex meal, and your macros available for that are 30 grams of protein, 10 grams of carbs, and 2 grams of fat, that's going to be a pretty shitty meal every time. I'm sorry. There's not too many ways you can dress that up. Unless you get really creative with, like, some, you know, protein pancakes and whatever. And did I mention I'm lazy? I've never made a protein pancake in my life. So, and probably never will. But the more macros you set aside for those meals that are flexible, obviously you want to make sure that you're still getting, you know, the carbs in where you need them, etc. Maybe you want your post-workout meal to be your flexible meal. It kind of depends on what your schedule is, what you're doing post-workout. Like, if you're working out in the morning, have your post-workout meal on your way to work in the car, that might not be the best time to make a flexible meal. But if you're going home and cooking something, hey, great, that works fine. But figure out the plan of attack, you know, compartmentalize and break it down into more sizable chunks, and don't wing it, whatever you do. I mean, go into each day, each week with a plan. And what I found works best is if you create yourself a meal plan, stick with it until you get sick of something and you want to change it. If you try and make every day different, you're going to create a lot of work for yourself. It's going to be, you know, there's a lot more accounting involved, you know, macro accounting. It just gets really tiresome and really tedious. Now, some people will say it's worth it. Like, they need that variety, and that's great. That's what a flexible plan lets you do. But I wouldn't by default take that approach unless you really know that you need that kind of approach in order to be successful. So some meals are always the same. So what I would do in your app, MyFitnessPal or whatever, just auto log those meals at the start of the day. So those macros get subtracted from your totals and you know that you don't have to worry about those. It's always easier to manage smaller numbers. Using recipes within MyFitnessPal is a big one. So, you know, there are a few things that my wife and I will make. You know, she makes a couple of soups, you know, a couple of other dishes. Like, we will, we do these taco bowls. Rather than using taco shells, we'll use some, like, quinoa chips, ground turkey, and other stuff in there in a bowl. You know, that's a little bit different because I always want to measure those individual things. But for something like a soup, which all gets put into a pot, and then you're like, okay, well, I've got all this shit in a pot. Now, how the hell am I supposed to figure out these macros? MyFitnessPal will let you create a recipe where you add the ingredients as you go along. So you're like, okay, I'm adding 4 cups of chicken broth, scan, add, great. I'm adding this can of tomatoes, scan, add. I'm adding, you know, 1 pound of ground turkey, scan, add. And then once you've got everything in there, then you can say, okay, that whole pot of soup is 1800 calories or whatever it is. And then you know what the macro breakdown is. And then you need to figure out how to portion it out. And, I'm using soups as the example here because they're the most difficult things. If you're making like, you know, a pan of lasagna, great. You can just look at that and divide it into 6 sections or whatever. And you say, okay, the whole thing is 2400 calories. I'm having 1/6 of that. It's 400 calories with this macro breakdown. Great. Now, for soups, though, it's tricky. So it's the most complicated example. What I would recommend is as you're adding stuff, you need to track volumes. So, you know, you're adding 4 cups of chicken broth. Great. You're adding this can of tomatoes. It's about 1.5 cups. Great. That's 5.5 total. You're adding this, blah, 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 blah. And you can kind of figure out over the course of it, you can say approximately how many cups of total stuff you have in there. Include the solids in there as well. So like the ground chicken that or ground turkey, whatever you put in there, that may end up being, you know, about 3 cups of it. So you say, okay, that adds 3 cups to the total volume as well, et cetera. So what we then have to do is make the assumption that the whole thing is a homogeneous mixture so that when you scoop out a cup of it, regardless of where you're scooping from, you're getting an average of the macros that are in there. We just kind of have to make that assumption in order to save our sanity. And then you just use a measuring cup when you start out. So you can say, okay, great. The whole thing is 1800 calories. And for sake of easy math, I'm going to say, let's say it all adds up to 18 cups. Great. So each cup is 100 calories. I'm going to dish myself out 4 cups. I've got 400 calories and I know what the macro breakdown is. Easy peasy, log that, you're done. And then you've got that recipe saved so that when you come back and make that soup again next time, you don't have to do all that work. It's just the first time you add a recipe like that, you've got to do that. So that's the recipes feature under MyFitnessPal. You do have to kind of eyeball some stuff if you're going with something visual like the lasagna or whatever, but it's all doable. When you're logging food entries, you really need to make judicious use of your bullshit detector. So the problem, I don't know where those database entries come from. I think a lot of them are user added, but a lot of them are bogus. Like you'll find something where it says, a six ounce portion of chicken breast is 80 grams of protein with 30 grams of fat. Like, what? No, it's not. So what I do, what I did a long time ago, was I would check many of those. And what I did actually was go on my computer and look up many sites like CalorieKing.com, SparkPeople, etc., all these sites that maintain these food databases. And I just got an average. I'm like, okay, the average consensus is that for an ounce of cooked chicken breast, it's about 30 calories, it's about 7 grams of protein, about 0.5 gram of fat per ounce. Great. Okay, so those are the calculations that I use when creating meal plans for clients. Those things, I came up with an average of all of those. So it's just good, though, to look at multiple things before you decide on an entry that you're going to use, because in MyFitnessPal, once you use an entry, it will show up in your frequently used or recently used foods list. So, what you don't want to use is a crappy database entry that has some bogus numbers and then continue using that because it shows up in your recently used list. So the first time you add something, if you're not doing a barcode scan, but you're searching for a food commodity like chicken breast, rice, etc., make sure it's listed as cooked or raw and that you're using the appropriate one for how you're measuring. Look at a couple entries and, you know, see if you can say, okay, this one's way off from the others. Maybe you can make the assumption that that one's anomalous and you can go with one of the others and look at a couple and just make sure that you're comfortable. Like, okay, I think that's pretty accurate. So, it's worth a little bit of extra time the first time you use a commodity food like that, just to make sure that it's a fair representation of reality. So, what else do we have here? Fine tuning and refining, you've got your plan put together, you're hitting the macros well, all is good, we're done, right? Well, not necessarily. What you should also pay attention to is, how do you feel on this plan? You've put this meal plan together for yourself, but, is it really working for you? You've got to think about, sensitivities, allergies, obviously. I mean, if you're allergic to peanuts and you put peanut butter on your meal plan, you're going to have a bad time. But, you can have sensitivities to something. Like, I know that I have sensitivities to dairy and wheat. So when I have products like, you know, if I use for a carb source some kind of cracker that's flour-based, you know, it's not going to kill me, but I'm going to feel it. And the feeling that I get is one where it's like, man, that really filled me up. That's sitting in my stomach kind of like a brick. Okay. And, you know, when you're trying to eat 600 grams of carbs in a day, the last thing you want is for a carb source to sit in your stomach like a brick and make you not want your next meal. So that's where, you know, it makes sense. And if you want to play it safe, just stick with 100% clean, single ingredient food sources. But you don't have to. You can experiment with other stuff and find out what your body tolerates more or less. You know, dairy and wheat are the big ones. Certain veggies, some people have problems processing, especially like really fibrous veggies, things like onions, peppers, etc. They can really cause a lot of, like, you know, gassy type bloat in the stomach, really make you uncomfortable. Other people, not so much. So, you know, broccoli is another one like that. Brussels sprouts can be like that as well. So sticking with things that are a little bit more basic, you know, the leafy greens, green beans, snap peas, you know, those kind of things might be a little bit more productive. But just be aware that, you know, how you feel after eating something is not irrelevant, and should be taken into consideration. It doesn't mean that you necessarily always have to avoid that food, but if you find something like that, I wouldn't make it a staple, an everyday staple of what you're doing. So it is a flexible plan, but the key thing is to also set your body up for success, and we want you to feel good throughout as well. So the other thing we need to do is balance out the intake. So we need to make sure that protein intake is fairly steady throughout the day. We don't have spikes where you've got a meal that's got 5 grams and another meal that's got 80 grams. So try and limit that a little bit and, you know, keep things a little bit more even-steven throughout the day. It makes sense if you load up your carbs around lifting time, pre, post, maybe even intra. If you've got the carbs to spare, it's a good time for them. And then typically, just to make things easier, I will typically put fats elsewhere. So I've got meals that are proteins and carbs, meals that are proteins and fats, just because it helps balance out the overall caloric intake. So I'm not, like, you know, having 80% of my calories in the first 50% of the day, and then I'm in like starvation mode the rest of the day where it's just like protein and nothing else. So that's one of those things where you can experiment with that, play around with it, and find your own comfort zone. And the other thing is to learn, you know, read labels, especially, you know, when you start cutting, this is where this becomes more valuable. So read those labels and look at, you know, your protein sources, protein powder specifically. You know, where are your trace carbs and trace fats coming from? Do you have, you know, are you having several protein shakes a day and there's trace carbs and fats in there that are eating into what you could have elsewhere? Like, you know, if you're having a few protein shakes and that's, you know, counting up maybe like as much as 14 grams of fat, and your allowance is only 35 for the day, well, crap, that's a lot. Maybe you should switch protein powders. I did that recently, and I switched to Isopure, which, yeah, a little bit more expensive, but it's also like, you know, two scoops is 50 grams protein, zero carb, zero fat. And, you know, as I was really being stringent about my fat macros, they were set at like 40 at the time I made that switch. I didn't want protein shakes eating up a quarter of my fat for the day when it was nothing I got to enjoy. So look at that, read labels, you know, identify some new options. Don't be afraid to try some new things, whether it's a new veggie mixture, a new carb source. Don't be afraid to try something packaged, you know, try something processed. It's not going to kill you. Worst case scenario, you'll realize, ooh, that didn't sit well with my stomach. And then you can kind of move on, but at least you tried it. But give yourself the freedom and the variety to explore those things. Now, obviously, if you are 4 weeks out from a show, that's not the time to try experimenting. But, you know, if you are trying, you know, a fairly casual cut, you're trying to learn your body a little bit, understand what it responds to, you don't have a hard deadline set or anything like that, that's a great time to try some things like that. So it's worth considering at least. That's Macros 102. You're all graduates. Nice job. A's across the board. Nice work. That's it. That's what I've got for this week. So I do appreciate everybody listening. I appreciate also the great comments and great feedback on Facebook. Thank you for that. It took me a while to realize that that stuff was happening. It wasn't showing up on my screen, so I don't know what happened there. I got to figure that out. I am a Facebook noob. I will figure it out, though. A Facebook Live noob, at least. I've only done this a few times. So once again, thanks for listening, everybody. I appreciate it. Any ideas, comments for upcoming episodes, always looking for suggestions there. Any questions on any of this stuff, you know, post comments here, send me an email, contact me through the website, anything like that. I just love to hear from anybody on any of this stuff. So that is me signing out for the week. So once again, ways to contact me, ways to find me. You could drive to Knoxville and hunt me down. I'd prefer you not. come work out at with me with work out with me at Gold's Gym on Kingston Pike. 5starphysique.com, facebook.com/5starphysique, Instagram at 5starfit, email Darren with one R at 5starphysique with two R's, star always with two R's. Yes, I had a question that is my real given last name also, so thank you for asking. So that's it. That's all I've got. Thanks again for listening. I appreciate it, and I certainly hope that you all tune in again next week. Until then, take care, lift hard.